Armoire makes getting dressed easy. With a clothing rental membership from Armoire, you can build the perfect wardrobe with brands that are high quality, unique, and recommended just for you. All you have to do is take a 5-minute style quiz and select items from your dynamic, personalized closet. And the styles show up at your door in as little as 2 days. Then when you're ready for new clothes, just swap them out for more new-to-you styles. So I've been using Armoire and I'm actually wearing one of their shirts right now as I'm recording this, and it's a great idea. You don't have to commit to buying the clothes, but you can really start to explore your own personal style. Like if there's a trend or something that you've been wanting to maybe try but not commit to, this is absolutely perfect. Because if you don't like it, you just put it back in the bag and get something else. Because we've all been there. You open your closet, and even though it's packed, you feel like you have nothing to wear. And with Armoire, that's a thing of the past. They make it effortless for all women to turn heads with stylish everyday looks. You can rent high-quality designer clothing for any occasion, and it's all tailored to your personal style. Plus, you don't have to do laundry, and you don't have to go shopping. It truly could not be any easier. And right now, my listeners can give Armoire a try and get up to 50% off their first month, which is up to $125 off. Just visit armoire.style/ATTWG. That's armoire.style, armoire.style/ATTWG to get up to 50% off your first month and never worry about what to wear again. Try Armoire today. Has it ever felt like you're doing everything right? You're eating healthy, you're working out, and yet your energy still crashes, or your mood swings hit out of nowhere, like a twist in a crime story that you didn't see coming. Listen, I've been there too, and what I've discovered is that many of these issues could be tied to hormonal imbalances, like a hidden criminal lurking in the background, throwing everything off track. But here's the good news. This is one mystery that you can solve with Happy Mammoth. There's no need for a long investigation. Just take the free 2-minute quiz from Happy Mammoth. You answer a few questions about what you're experiencing and where you're at in life, and you'll uncover the real culprit behind your hormonal symptoms. And the best part? After taking the quiz, you'll get a personalized recommendation to help you balance your hormones so you can finally feel like yourself again. According to a survey, after taking Hormone Harmony, 86% of women started to lose weight. 77% said that it improved their mood. And the biggest benefit? 100% of women surveyed said they're feeling like themselves again. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code ATTWG at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code ATTWG for 15% off today. Are you ready to lose weight? With Effecty, getting access to powerful GLP-1 weight loss medications has never been easier or more affordable. Effecty offers compounded semaglutide, the same active ingredient as the popular name brands, but for up to 80% less. These medications work by regulating appetite and blood sugar, helping you lose weight in a sustainable, science-backed way. Getting started is so simple. Just fill out a short medical questionnaire, then connect with a licensed provider through a quick chat-based telehealth consultation. If you're eligible, your prescription gets shipped straight to your door. No hassle, no waiting rooms. With transparent pricing, no hidden fees, and no membership required, Effecty is committed to making proven weight loss treatments accessible to everyone. Effecty gave me the opportunity to try their service out, and I have to say, it is just as easy as they say it is. I filled out the questionnaire, and within days, a package arrived at my door filled with everything I needed and detailed instructions. Their website also tells you everything you need to know, and you can always chat with your healthcare provider. It really is that simple and convenient. So if you're ready to level up your weight loss game, my listeners can now get $50 off of GLP-1 weight loss treatments at Effecty.com with code ATTWG at checkout. That's Effecty.com, EFFECTY.com, and use the code ATTWG to get $50 off your first month of GLP-1 weight loss treatment. No hassles, no memberships, and no hidden fees. So get started today. October 24th, 1998 was an unseasonably warm day in Brooklyn, New York. 28-year-old Christine Kupko was going out with her ex-boyfriend. The pair had barely begun dating when their relationship ended suddenly. But they had recently started talking again, and on this day, he told Christine that he was going to show her his new apartment in Queens. He was talking reconciliation, and while Christine didn't seem to be too interested in that, she did want to stay on good terms with him. After all, she was 5 months pregnant with their child. What was supposed to be an afternoon out and a possible new beginning turned into a mystery that has lasted over 20 years. Christine never returned home that day, and the last person who was with her, Rudy Persaud, isn't talking. When a person goes missing, there's a special kind of pain in the not knowing. I want to tell the stories of those who never came home. I want to tell you the story of Christine Kupko. I'm Kona Gallagher.
And I'm Ethan Flick.
And this is And Then They Were Gone.
Okay, so right away, I just want to say that I feel like this story is pretty close to you for several reasons. A, 28, 5 months pregnant. You were 27 when you had your first child. You are also living in New York at the time. Not in 1998, obviously, yeah. But at the same age.
That's really creepy that you already brought that up, because there are so many more similarities that really freaked me out.
Okay.
As I was doing this. Yeah. And those are just like the two, you know, main ones, but no, there are more. It goes on. It's really upsetting.
I'll be sure to bring them up every time.
Yeah, it's crazy. So welcome back, everyone. Like, I am excited to dive into this case because this was actually a reader suggestion.
Oh.
So somebody had actually contacted us through our website and said that, you know, this case had been bothering them for a while and that we should look into it. And it is crazy because I never heard of it.
Yeah. I mean, it's not surprising that I haven't heard of
it. Yeah. Because while I did not live in New York City in 1998, I moved there in like 2005. It seems like this was a really high profile case at the time in the city because it was on the cover of New York Magazine not too long after she disappeared. And there were a couple of other unrelated but weird disappearances that happened in a short period of time.
That is strange that you wouldn't have gotten sucked into it.
I know. Yeah. But no, I had never heard of it until that reader suggested it. So thank you. So they were anonymous on our website, so I don't know who to thank, but thank you, whoever you are. Hopefully you're still listening and you will hear this. But before we jump in, I want to give a special shout out to our newest patrons, Haley A. and my sister, Kaylee. Kaylee loved the fact that I mentioned her last week, was not happy that I used it to make fun of her, and was annoyed that I didn't use her name. So here we go. Positive mention, use your name.
Kaylee.
Yeah. But thank you so much to both of you, mainly Haley. If any of you are interested in supporting us on our Patreon, you can find us at patreon.com/ATTWGpod. All right, enough about that. Let's get on to this case. Christine Kupko was born in Mount Carroll, Illinois on May 3rd, 1970. Christine was the youngest of six children. Her parents divorced when she was young, and her father, who was a firefighter, passed away while she was a child. Christine's mother, Ellie Bodell, moved her children to Madison, Wisconsin after his death. Going from a rural town to a city suited Christine's free-spirited nature. After deciding that her public school was too restrictive, she transferred to Malcolm Shabazz High School, which was an alternative school.
Hmm.
It was like apparently one of those places where, you know, they had couches everywhere and, you know, everybody just kind of hung out.
When you say alternative school, I think immediately that's just where they ship the pregnant people.
Yeah, no. In this case, it was like where all the hippie kids went, it sounds like.
Oh, I probably would have enjoyed my high school a lot better if I had gone there.
Mm-hmm. After graduation, Christine initially followed a traditional route and enrolled at the University of Wisconsin. That didn't last long, however, and she soon dropped out. Christine was looking for a big change in her life and didn't think she would find it in Madison. So she moved halfway across the country to Atlanta, Georgia. There, she got a waitress job and found a roommate. But it turned out that Atlanta really wasn't for her either. The article that I read, that New York Magazine article I mentioned, said it was like too much big hair and, you know, just ostentatious people, I guess. And she was looking for something a little different. So it wasn't until she visited her sister that she found her place, New York City. Christine enrolled at Baruch College and studied philosophy. She was planning on going into law and becoming a civil rights attorney.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. She bounced around the city, living in both Manhattan and Brooklyn, until she found a home in Brooklyn's Kensington neighborhood. She was able to rent two floors and sublet the rooms out, giving her a total of five roommates, making it affordable for everyone. And she led the typical 20-something New York City life. She wore all black. She listened to Liz Phair, dated, went to school, and supported herself by waiting tables at a Caribbean restaurant.
I'm 1998, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think back. I mean, we were 17, so yeah.
I was also listening to Liz Phair at that time. Here's the part that really killed me, because Kensington is a weird neighborhood in Brooklyn. It's not like one of the trendy ones mm-hmm. that you hear about people moving to, especially back in 1998. But that is actually the first neighborhood in Brooklyn that I lived in.
Really?
Yeah.
See, I always thought that, well, okay. I
moved around a lot. I lived in a lot of different places, but, and I lived in Brooklyn two different times, but the first time was in Kensington.
Okay, I only thought that you lived in the Bronx. I didn't realize you bounced around within the city.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I moved like four times in a year. So, yeah, so I lived in Kensington, so I'm very familiar with the neighborhood. And, you know, she waited tables at a Caribbean restaurant. I waited tables at a diner in the Fashion District. Like, it was just, I don't know.
So did you just, like, live her life 10 years ahead?
10 years after.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. It was weird. But I had already graduated college by the time I had gotten there and had no illusions of being a civil rights attorney. So she was definitely ahead of me in many ways.
Or no illusions of being successful.
Right. Also that. Having spent most of her 20s finding herself and moving around the country, Christine was older than your typical college student. So when she began to have a crush on the man who taught her Introduction to Environmental Sciences lab, he was only a few years older than she was. So she was 28, you know, at this time. And this guy had like just graduated in 1995.
Okay.
So, you know, they were like right around, you know, but he had graduated his master's. I don't know, but they were very close to the same age. So this isn't like a professor who was 30 years older than her or anything like that.
It's not necessarily an inappropriate relationship.
No, no. Yeah. Darshanan Prasad went by Rudy and was a handsome, shy Indo-Guyanese man. That means that his heritage was Indian and he was from Guyana. He was just an adjunct professor at Baruch, which was his alma mater. But his main job was as a quality control chemist who tested glue products at a company called Basic Adhesives.
Wow. I mean, I don't know what to do with that.
Yeah, it's a lot, right?
A quality control officer at a glue factory.
Yeah.
Basically.
Like, I don't know what that means.
Sounds like he was getting high all the time.
Maybe. He seemed to be Christine's total opposite. She was outspoken and passionate about feminism and vegetarianism. And he came...
And you are also a vegetarian.
Yeah. And he came from a close-knit religious family. So they were Brahmins, and Rudy's father was actually a priest.
Hmm.
Rudy still lived with his parents in Brooklyn. But Christine was drawn to Rudy's differences and told her friends he was like, quote, a newborn baby. And Rudy seemed like an upstanding guy. When it became clear that Christine had feelings for him, which like one of his friends had to tell him because he didn't get it, you know, he's like that type of dude. He didn't act like a lecherous college professor hitting on a co-ed. Like he waited until her final grade was filed before they went out on a date in the spring of 1998. But Rudy also seemed to be pretty inscrutable. before they went out, it took Christine a while to kind of figure out like what his deal was, you know, like if he had a girlfriend, like where he was coming from, you know, because he was so shy and kind of awkward. Like she
So maybe he was just awkward around women.
Yeah. And so like,
I mean, he is also a chemist at a glue factory. Right. So, I mean,
yeah,
that doesn't sound like a real wild and crazy guy.
Yeah, exactly. But apparently he told Christine that he was in fact single, though he did recently break up with someone. Hmm. So, you know, they exchanged numbers and Christine gave Rudy her phone number and Rudy gave her his pager number. When it was time for their date, Rudy drove and picked Christine up at her house. When he came to the home, Christine's longest term roommate, a woman named Oslem, met him as well. And, you know, this may be hindsight, like, because, again, she's getting interviewed for New York Magazine, you know, a short time later. But she told New York Magazine that her impression of Rudy when she met him was that he was cute, but that he was hiding something.
Oh, well, I mean, what does that mean?
Well, exactly. And it could be very legit because, you know, like roommates and friends, like they know, right? Like they tend to know that if a guy is shady when they first meet him.
Yeah, I guess guy roommates don't. they provide zero input.
Right, right.
Sorry, George.
Yeah, but no, girl roommates definitely do. And so she could have had that feeling from the very beginning, or could be like, okay, all this happened. And now in hindsight, yeah, he was hiding something.
Right, yeah.
Their first date involved them sleeping together, and it seems like they saw each other casually, but they only had sex the one time. But by mid-June, Christine was convinced that she was pregnant. And so she told this to her friend, Valerie Santos, who actually happened to work at a health clinic. So she brought Christine home a pregnancy test.
Okay.
And so Christine took it, and like, even though she'd been saying like, oh, I'm positive, I'm pregnant, like, I know, you know, when she still saw the positive test, like, it was a shock.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's when reality sets
in. Well, exactly. And even if you're trying to get pregnant, like, it's still hard to wrap your mind around until you actually see that in front of you, you know? Even though Christine was very pro-choice, she didn't consider having an abortion. After all, the way she saw it, she was just 6 months away from getting her degree. She was 28 and she had a great house. You know, she just felt as though a baby was another part of life and another challenge that she could take on.
Yeah, she was at a point in her life where she could do that. You know,
yeah.
It's not like she was a 16-year-old or anything like that. I get that.
Absolutely. And yeah. She had a strong support system. I mean, not only did she have all these like very close friends around, but her sister lived in town.
Oh, okay.
And her sister was a mom already. So, you know, like she had people. It wasn't like she was just going to be doing this 100% on her own. Although, I mean, she very much did plan on being a single mom from the beginning. You know, she didn't have any like grand plans of her and Rudy getting married and moving to the suburbs and, you know.
Right. No, she's being realistic, and which is good.
Well, exactly. They had sex once.
Yeah.
And it's not 1955. She was like, yeah, odds are we're probably not going to like end up together.
Yeah.
But that's fine. And so that's kind of where she was. But because they had only had sex once and like they were barely even seeing each other, she was dreading the conversation of when she had to tell him, because I mean, oh my God, talk about awkward.
Yeah.
So yeah, she kind of like put that conversation off for a little while, as you can imagine, because it would have taken me a long time to get the guts up.
Well, sure. And also, you know, not to sound terrible, but you know, you don't know what's going to happen in the first couple of months of being pregnant either.
Right. No.
So, you know, at that point, is it really worth having that conversation?
Yeah. And I'm sure she probably went back and forth, but she did tell him, you know, relatively quickly. Like she didn't wait super long, but I don't think she told him the day she took the test either. So she ended up paging Rudy and asked him if they could meet because she had something important to talk to him about. But he told her he was busy, so she eventually just like broke the news over the phone. Mm. And the conversation did not go well. He immediately denied that he could be the father, even though Christine knew he was because she hadn't been sleeping with anyone else, you know, in the time frame that would have biologically made sense. But still, he said, it can't be me
because as he told her, and you'll love this, he had a partial vasectomy.
What?
I don't know what that was even supposed to mean.
You, what?
I don't know. Like, does he mean that, like, the doctor went in and just didn't get the job done? Like, what?
Only snipped one and not the other?
I don't know.
What?
I don't know.
Also, as a person with only one testicle, you can still get people pregnant.
Yeah.
So, like, what is it? What?
I don't know. But that excuse obviously did not work, and he quickly let go of it, thankfully, because it's utter nonsense.
a partial vasectomy?
Yeah, partial.
All right.
As Christine later told her sister Kathy, as she's, you know, recounting this whole horrible conversation, Rudy then began literally crying and begging her to get an abortion.
Mm. So is this where it's going to start involving his family's religious beliefs?
Yes. But before that, and maybe beyond that, he had another bombshell to drop.
Engaged? Married?
Married.
Yeah, there we go.
Yep. Apparently, the professor, who was so above board that he wouldn't date Christine until she was officially out of his class, had just gotten married. Like, literally right before she told him he was pregnant, he had gotten back from his honeymoon.
Wow.
Yeah. So technically, he wasn't married when he and Christine slept together. But then, like, they slept together, and part of the reason why they had only slept together the one time and hadn't really been, like,
because he had to go on his honeymoon?
He was in Turkey on his honeymoon.
What a shitbag.
Yeah.
So I take that back. It's not a religious thing.
Well,
he's just an asshole.
Not just. It's really just there's a lot of stuff going on here. But that's the timeline that we're dealing with here. So, like, he's engaged when he and Christine, you know, start, like, flirting, exchanging numbers, you know, whatever. He's engaged when they sleep together. He gets married. He goes on his honeymoon. He comes back from his honeymoon and finds out that Christine's pregnant. So, you know, he tells her this. And then he kept on, you know, begging, and then said that his parents would also disown him.
Sure.
Yeah. Oh, and not only, so you've got the marriage thing, you've got the religious beliefs thing, you know, his dad's a priest, but his parents and his wife, who was apparently an accountant, were going to be paying for him to go to dental school. So he didn't want this baby to mess that up for him.
Didn't you say he was a chemist?
Yeah, but, like, you know, now he wanted to be a dentist.
I mean, I just feel like he's got a good job.
Yeah, well, regardless, he wanted this better job or whatever, and he wanted his parents and his wife to pay for his schooling, so he did not need Christine and this baby messing all of that up for him.
Use a condom, then.
Yeah. And it's important to note that Christine wasn't asking a lot from him at this point. Like, I'm sure she was upset that he was married because, you know, who likes being lied to?
Yeah, right.
But again, she didn't have any illusions that they're going to get married and, you know, have this whole life together.
But I'm sure she wanted some sort of help or support.
Well, yeah.
With
so
the baby.
Right. Well, what she wanted from Rudy, and this is what she, like, laid out to him, was this. She wanted to have him on the birth certificate. She wanted her future child to know who his or her father was. So that was her main thing. She's like, you know, I'm not going to have this baby and just have it me on the birth certificate. You know, you're going to be on there too.
Now, was she asking for his involvement in the child's life?
No, not really. Like, she was like, I'm fine with raising this baby on my own. And I've read different things that said that she actually wanted him to give up parental rights. But I read another thing that said more that, like, she kind of almost the opposite, that she just wanted to reserve the right to like ask him for child support down the line, basically, if they needed something. You know what I mean? So like she wasn't even going to be like, okay, baby's going to be born, you're going to start paying me monthly.
Yeah.
She just wants to say like, listen, if anything happens, like I need to be able, like I need to know that you're going to be there, basically, but not on a daily basis.
My mind is blown. I mean, okay. You know, like if I were in his position,
yeah,
like, okay.
Right. But he was still like, you're ruining my life. You're ruining my life.
But at this point, like he could probably get away with like not telling his wife
or his family. She wasn't threatening to tell anybody or do anything like that. She just like wanted these basic things, but she wasn't going to let him completely just not acknowledge the fact that this was happening.
Yeah, yeah. And but, look, he's already a shitbag, so like what's one more layer of assery on top of that?
Well, yeah, but I mean, I think from his perspective, like this was something she was doing to him, right? Like he had his life planned and she was messing that up.
Well, look, man up.
Yeah, well, apparently he did not. So every time they spoke, he kept on begging her to terminate the pregnancy. And he kept telling her that this baby was going to completely ruin him. And, you know, so obviously, like, things weren't going great. And eventually, he just stopped calling her. But, you know, this isn't just the end of a relationship in your 20s. Like, she wasn't just going to let him just ghost her.
Yeah.
It, you know, they had to work it out, like, one way or another. Although, it should be said, I mean, Christine's friends and family were obviously not fans of him. And, like, they kind of got where Christine was coming from, but a lot of them are like, just let him go. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's more trouble than it's worth, really, at this point. Like, he's obviously not going to be a good dad. Like, it might actually end up being better for both you and the baby if you do just cut him out completely.
But all that being said, like, she also has every right.
Oh, yeah,
I don't want to say forcing him, but like asking him to be involved with the child's life.
Right.
She has every right to be doing that.
No, she absolutely like
she
does.
She is not.
She didn't get pregnant by herself.
Right. She is not a bad guy in the situation at all.
No. I think it got so stressful that her friends are like, is this worth it? You know, I think that was really
where they were coming from.
Yeah, yeah. It was just like, is it worth it? We know you can handle this by yourself. You're planning on mainly handling it by yourself. Like, you know, just maybe don't push it because this guy sucks. But ultimately, Christine didn't want to do that, which, like you said, is her right.
Yeah.
But here's the thing about really big, dumb secrets that you don't seem to be good at keeping. They get found out.
Yeah.
So I don't think anyone was incredibly surprised when a woman called Christine's apartment at the end of July asking who kept on paging Rudy.
Mm.
Yeah. So it was his wife, Rochelle. And like I said, Christine never tried to blow up Rudy's life. She didn't threaten him. She didn't show up at his house or like try to track down his wife or anything like that. In fact, when Rochelle called, she initially lied for Rudy and said like, oh, no, I'm just his student. Like, I just had to ask him a question about, you know, an assignment or whatever she said. But she totally just said, oh, yeah, I'm a student.
I mean, that's huge.
It is.
You know, I mean, I feel like she's going out of her way
to make this as easy as possible for him when he does not deserve it.
No.
Yeah.
Not at all. Look, I mean, shit happens in your life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, stuff doesn't, and I'm not saying that to dismiss his actions, but own it. You can't get out of this.
Right, exactly. You know, like I said, so Rochelle called and Christine's like, no, he's my teacher, whatever. But then Rochelle kept calling because I guess she didn't quite buy it.
Yeah.
And eventually Christine did tell her that they had been involved, but they weren't any longer. And like when they were involved, they weren't married yet and she didn't know about her, you know, everything that you could imagine she would say in that conversation.
Yeah.
But eventually the whole story does come out and, you know, Rochelle learns that she's pregnant. And at first, Rochelle was understandably furious with her husband.
For sure, yeah.
Right? Yeah. Apparently telling Christine that she could have him, but then Christine was like, no, thanks. I'm good.
That wasn't my objective.
Yeah. Like, you can keep him. And Christine's friends, you know, think that she felt badly for Rochelle, which is also understandable. I mean, it's not her fault that her husband is a cheating, lying dirtbag.
Yeah. Yeah. Both of these women were innocent in this.
Yeah, exactly. They were both victimized by the scumbag.
Yeah.
Christine kept trying to reassure her that she didn't want to harm their relationship, you know, and she just wanted like a few things from Rudy. After this whole back and forth and everything came out, it seems like they all kind of stopped talking to each other for a while. And things just went pretty much back to normal. But by October, Rudy came slinking back. So he told Christine that his parents were out of town and that his wife kicked him out. So Rudy...
Which might have been true.
Yeah, maybe.
At that point.
But they were living with his parents at that point, too.
Oh.
Yeah, so that's the thing. So when I said at the beginning, when he and Christine kind of started dating, he was living with his parents in Brooklyn. He was. And then when he got married, like, he and his wife were living with his parents in Brooklyn.
Interesting.
Yeah, but he still said that he got kicked out. But, you know, so they apparently at this point started talking again and like spending some time together, but not romantically. They weren't going to get back together or anything like that. And Christine actually kept on urging him to try to reconcile with his wife.
Christine sounds like a saint.
I know.
I mean, like.
I know. That is where our similarities end.
Yeah. Like, how much are you going to go through for this guy?
Exactly. Yeah. It did seem at this point like Christine was also finally getting what she wanted, which was Rudy's involvement. He apparently during this time told her that he wanted to be her birth coach and wanted to give the baby a Hindu name. So he seems super on board, but like that actually made Christine a little suspicious.
No, pump the brakes on that.
Yeah.
All of your actions up to this point does not lend itself to you like being by my bedside while giving birth.
Right. No. Yeah. Exactly. Sorry. And that's what she was thinking. She's like, this is a little bit too much of a 180.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like a gradual.
Well, it sounds to me like he was actually telling the truth. He got thrown out and now he's grasping for something else. A relationship, a home, whatever.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I have no idea, but he was still he was saying all this stuff, but he's still acting kind of weird. Like, Christine apparently told one of her friends that it bothered her because he would, you know, pat her on the head, but he would never touch her stomach. In the final weeks before her disappearance, Christine didn't seem to be exactly afraid of Rudy overtly.
Okay.
But she also didn't seem to think that him being violent was out of the question either.
Okay, so where does that come from?
So she would say things to friends like, if anything happens to me, it's him. Super ominous stuff like that. But it didn't sound like she was afraid that he'd kill her or like anything like that. She was more afraid that he would find some way to make her lose the baby. So she was afraid that he'd like punch her in the stomach.
I guess my question is more, where is that coming from?
I think it was really just coming from the fact that she didn't trust what he was saying. Like, she didn't really believe that he had been kicked out. Because one, it wasn't that he was just, you know, living with his wife. He was living with his parents.
Yeah.
And two, he would say weird stuff too. Like, oh, I'm just waiting for Dunkin' Donuts to throw out their trash so I can eat. And it's like, you have a job. Like, what are you even talking about?
He has money.
Right. So he'd like say weird things like that, that she's like, well, that's not real. Like, what are you even talking about? And then this whole thing with like, oh, yeah, now I want to be your birth coach, even though I was like begging you to get an abortion forever. So she just didn't trust him. Like, she almost, there was a big part of her that wanted to see the best in him, right? That wanted to see the part of him that she saw when they first got to know each other. But there was this other part of her that was like, there's something not right here, and I don't know what it is.
So I can understand her wanting to see the best mm-hmm. in him because
it's the father of a child,
going to
right?
have his yeah. child, yes. But being suspicious of him mm-hmm. and then jumping to he might throw me down a flight of stairs to mm-hmm. murder my unborn baby. Mm-hmm. I'm just wondering if there was any behavior of aggression previous to that.
No, it doesn't sound like it. At least, and it sounds like she was very open with her friends and her sister, Kathy.
So you think that they would have known
about
something?
I think so. I mean, you never know, because sometimes if you are in an abusive situation, you know, you don't tell even those who are closest to you.
Well, especially if it's new.
Right, exactly. You know? So maybe. I mean, we obviously cannot 100% rule that out.
Yeah.
But what I will say is that nobody in her life had any indication of that.
Okay.
But part of the reason, so even though she maybe had these suspicions, part of the reason why she ultimately just thought she was like overthinking or, you know, being dramatic or whatever, because she was like, well, he's not going to actually do anything to me because it would be too obvious.
Okay.
Right? Like everybody would look at him. So, and that's what she said. She's like, okay, well, yeah, I do kind of feel like he would do something that would make me lose this baby, but like he wouldn't really because that would be ridiculous.
All right. So let's get into the timeline.
On the night of October 23rd, Christine had told Aslam, her roommate, that Rudy had called. And this is, you know, just a little while after they've been talking and he was telling her he's eating Dunkin' Donuts trash or whatever. He said,
I'm sorry.
It was such a weird detail.
Why specifically Dunkin' Donuts?
I don't know. I mean, there are a lot of Dunkin' Donuts in the city.
I feel like there's a lot of other restaurants that would probably throw out better food than like the old donuts.
I don't know. When he called on October 23rd, he had told Christine that he found an apartment in Queens and that he wanted to take her to go see it. And this is interesting because there are so many different accounts of like what they were actually supposed to be doing this day. And I think if you read a lot of different articles, it can seem contradictory. But what I think it is that they had several things planned. So what it sounds like is that Rudy told her he had gotten this apartment in Queens and she was going to go and help like him clean it out or something. And then they were going to go have brunch.
What?
Yeah, and I don't know how you go from eating Dunkin' Donuts trash to affording an apartment in Queens and then having brunch, but like whatever. So
the apartment was by a Dunkin' Donuts?
No, I don't think so. I think the Dunkin' Donuts is like by her house. In any case, that was the plan. They were going to Queens because he said that he had gotten a new apartment. And so it seemed as though this was somewhat of an olive branch type situation where he's like, okay, I'm getting this new apartment. I want you to see it. Perhaps, and this is just me extrapolating, but like perhaps the idea that, you know, our baby will eventually be spending time here.
Oh, okay. I see.
You know what I mean? Yeah, like, because he's still trying to like mend fences.
Yeah.
At this point.
Yeah.
So I think in theory. Yeah, in
theory.
And I think that was kind of just the impression that he was trying to give her.
Okay.
So he called, you know, that night on October 23rd, Christine told her roommate Aslam about that and, you know, said, yeah, so we're going to go do this tomorrow. But Christine had overslept. And so when Rudy got there at around 11 a.m. on Saturday, the 24th, he rang the buzzer. So it was Aslam who actually, you know, answered and then let him in because, again, she knew he was coming over. So it wasn't weird or anything like that. Now, she said that Rudy seemed like really agitated and nervous and stuff like that. But that's not very weird to me either because it's a very awkward situation. Yeah, and you know, Christine's been like talking shit about you to her roommate.
And I'm sure the roommate who her initial impression was not good way before she found out that, you know, he was married. And then he started acting like a complete shit when he mm-hmm. found out that. Yeah. I mean, like at this point, I'm sure that the roommate was not
like super friendly and welcoming. Yeah, like,
oh, hey, Rudy.
So
come
good to
on
see
in.
You again. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm sure that in any situation, anyone would have kind of been nervous and like agitated, you know, while he was waiting for Christine. Cause it sounds like too that Christine like wasn't quick. She like woke up, ate her breakfast like leisurely and got dressed.
So like you.
No, more like my other sister, Andrea.
Oh, sorry, Andrea, if you're listening, but that's true.
Yeah. But right before they left the apartment, like literally as they were walking out the door, Christine called her sister, Kathy. And because apparently, I mean, she basically called her every day. Like they talked constantly. Kathy wasn't there. So she left a message on her machine and said, quote, "I'm going to look at Rudy's new apartment in Queens. I'll call you later this afternoon. See ya," end quote. But Christine never called.
Have you ever wondered what it would be like to have a podcast host as your realtor? No, of course you haven't. That would be insane. Hey, it's Kona here to tell you that we can make that insanity happen because I actually am a realtor based in Northern Virginia. So if you happen to live in the area, I can help you directly, but I can also help anyone around the world achieve your real estate goals because I have an amazing referral network that I work with and I help people everywhere. I also offer special incentives to veterans, to active military members, to AARP members, and so many more people. So if you are interested in buying, selling, renting, whatever it may be, all you need to do is go to my website, callkona.com, and we can connect. And I promise I will also give you all of the tea and all of the background info on this podcast if you want to. So again, that's callkona.com. If you need real estate. So let's get back to the episode.
And Kathy was worried when she didn't hear from her sister that day, but I mean, what was she going to do, you know?
Yeah.
But when Aslam called her the next morning to tell her that Christine had never come home.
Okay, so last person that saw her, aside from Rudy,
Was Aslam.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so Aslam knew that, you know, she was just supposed to be out with Rudy for the afternoon. But, you know, when she didn't come home or whatever, that's not like, again, she's 28 years old. We're not talking about children here.
Right.
But it was weird for her to not have come home at all that night. And again, Aslam knew the whole situation. She knew Kathy. And so she's like, she immediately called Kathy and was like, "Hey, this doesn't seem right." And Kathy agreed. So she wasted no time springing into action. Kathy, her husband, and their toddler son all went down to the police station to report Christine missing.
Which I'm sure was not met with, "Oh yeah, we're going to definitely open an active investigation on this."
No. Christine was an adult with no health concerns. And so they
aside from the unborn child.
Being 5 months pregnant, which really was interesting to me because typically what you see nowadays, and at least in our area, that if a pregnant woman goes missing, it is actually treated as a much more concerning thing than if a random 28-year-old went missing.
Yeah, agreed.
Right? But the NYPD did not treat this that way at all. They're like, she's in between the ages of 16 and 64. She has like, those were their,
That's a huge age gap.
I know, but that's what they told her. So she were younger than 16 or older than 64, they would jump into action sooner. But because she was smack in the middle of that, they weren't super interested. So they told her that not only were they not going to start a missing persons investigation that day, but it was going to be 2 days before they would even take an informational report from her.
Okay. Again, it's not so much her age, but it's the fact that she's pregnant.
And statistically, and these, you know, have been the statistics for years, like homicide is the number one cause of death for pregnant women.
Did not know that.
Yeah. And they even said things like, "Well, maybe she went back to Wisconsin for a visit." And Kathy's like, "What the hell are you even talking about?" Like, no.
I mean, her family is in Wisconsin, right?
Yeah.
So if she went back for a visit,
someone would know.
Somebody'd probably call and be like, "Hey,
Kathy weirdly showed up," even though she left her apartment without like a jacket or luggage or barely any money. So it was all nonsense. And Kathy obviously knew it was not nonsense. There wasn't much left for anyone to do that day, though, which was Sunday. But the next day, Monday, Kathy and her husband, Kevin, went to Baruch. But they didn't go there to find Christine. They went there to find Rudy. And I don't think that Rudy was actually teaching there that semester. Because, again, he was just an adjunct professor and he had this full-time job. So I don't know if he had a class or not.
Yeah.
But they did go to the personnel office and try to get his address. But the clerk there said, no, I'm not going to give you a professor's address randomly. Like, I don't know you, you know? Yeah. And so she was like, bring a subpoena and then you can have it. But since Christine was a student, like they basically just went through her network of friends and acquaintances and they all kind of pieced together a general address for Rudy.
Okay.
And it was in Bushwick, which is another neighborhood in Brooklyn. By this time, one of Christine's closest friends, Nick Papanicolou, had joined the search. And this, you talked about how Christine was a saint earlier, this should really give you some idea of the type of person she was in relationships. So Christine and Nick dated for like 2.5 years, and I think they might have even lived together. But Christine had ended the relationship about it sounds like not too long before she started dating Rudy, but she apparently did it in such a way that the two stayed incredibly close. Mm. So when all of this went down, like Nick was right there. I mean, he was right there with his Christine's sister, like leading the search, you know, trying to do everything that they could to find her.
Yeah.
So once they had like the general address, Nick and Christine's brother-in-law, Kevin, went to Bushwick to confront Rudy.
Mm.
So they found the house that they thought was his because it had an Indian flag and a Guyanese flag in front of it, right? And so they're like, this might be it.
There's some indicators there.
So they find the house, but they're not positive it's him. So they just kind of sat in the car and waited. Eventually, an older man came to the house. So Nick and Kevin approached him and asked about Rudy. It turns out that they did have the right house, and this was Rudy's uncle. And he told them that he had seen Rudy on Saturday morning, but not again until Sunday evening.
Okay.
But, yeah. I mean, that doesn't necessarily mean anything, you know?
Right. Do we know, is this uncle living in the house or this
I don't think he was, but I'm really not clear on that at all.
Yeah. So, it's not a...
Either way, it's a terrible
timeline witness.
No,
as far
no.
as Rudy's whereabouts go.
Not at all. So they're like, okay, well, that's, you know, some sort of information though. So they went back to the car and waited. And then later, Rudy's mother got home. And it sounds like they kind of just unloaded everything on her and told her that she needed to have Rudy there at 7 p.m. so that they could talk to him.
Okay.
Yeah, so this is like 5:30 at this time. So Rudy showed up at 7, just like they asked, in the back of a police van. So Rudy's mother had apparently told Rudy that there were two men waiting for him and wanted to talk about Christine. So Rudy went to the police station to get an escort home.
Interesting.
Yeah. So Nick and Kevin are waiting, and then this police van pulls up. Two officers get out, guns drawn, and frisk them.
Whoa, what?
Yeah. Because, like, I guess Rudy had, like, told them that his mom had called and said that these, like, men were there, like, harassing him. And
I wonder if there was some miscommunication between the attempted missing persons report and this incident.
What do you mean?
NYPD probably didn't start any type of information or any type of reports on the...
At this time, no.
Because if you had... some sort of information, some sort of contact information about a potential missing persons related to Rudy. And then Rudy comes in and says, the family is waiting for me.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the reaction would have been different. I mean, I'm also completely confused as to why they would jump out with guns drawn. I mean, are you sure that actually happened?
That this is according to Kevin. So this is what Kevin told reporters later. He said that Rudy pulled up in the van, that he and Nick were waiting, and that the cops jumped out, guns drawn, frisked them, and like Rudy just kind of hopped out of the van all casually. And so this next section is directly from that New York Magazine article that I mentioned earlier, and this is Kevin's account of the event. So this is all, quote, "Where's Christine?" Kevin demanded. "How should I know?" came Rudy's flippant answer, according to both men. "You killed Christine," Nick insisted. "Where is she?" He said, "I don't know what you're talking about. And why don't you go file a missing persons report?" recalls Kevin. Kevin asked Rudy what he and Christine had done on Saturday since, quote, "you were the last one seen with her." He said that he had dropped Christine off two blocks from her house between 3 and 4 p.m. because she wanted to go to the health food store, and that was the last time he had seen her. Kevin asked Rudy where he'd gone with Christine. Rudy told Kevin they went shopping. Kevin asked where. Rudy said, "some mall." Kevin and Nick kept the questions up. "Which mall? Which stores?" Rudy said he had stayed in the car while she shopped.
Okay, so his story is changing.
Yeah.
They were supposed to go to an apartment.
Uh-huh.
Instead, he's saying that they went to some mall and he sat in the car while she shopped.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, who does that?
Nobody. And one thing to note about New York City is, like, there aren't a lot of malls.
Yeah, I was getting there. aren't all the malls in New Jersey?
Well, not all of them, but yes, mostly. If you want to go to what we, people who grew up in the suburbs, like what you really consider a mall, like, yes, you're going to go to Jersey. But there is the Manhattan Mall, which is on 32nd Street. The mall that would make the most sense geographically would be Atlantic Center, which was also in Brooklyn. That would have been a very quick drive for them. And that was a mall. But like you said, they could have also driven to Jersey. And those malls, like in Paramus and places like that, were not far either. So there were a ton of malls nearby. But Manhattan, Brooklyn, and New Jersey are very different geographic locations. Right. So like, even if you didn't remember the name of the mall, you should at least be able to narrow it down that much.
Yeah, and you said he drove.
Yeah, he drove. So it's like, did you go over a bridge?
Right.
Did you go through a tunnel? Did you just go to the other end of Brooklyn? Like, he should have been able, if the story was real in any way, he should have been able to narrow it down at least.
All right, so we already know that he's a liar about
everything.
Damn near everything. Yeah. He's not being questioned by the cops at this point.
No.
He's being questioned by her friends.
Yeah, yeah, her brother-in-law and her ex-boyfriend.
Yeah, so obviously, he's blowing them off with these answers.
Oh, 100%. And there obviously was no mall, but he couldn't tell them or his family or the cops who were standing there who had no idea what the hell was even going on, the story that he told Christine, because there was also no apartment in Queens. If he had said the story that he had told Christine, then he would basically be admitting that he lured her somewhere under false pretenses.
Right.
Because there's no apartment in Queens.
Hmm.
So Rudy went home, and eventually so did Kevin and Nick. And about 5 days after her disappearance, Christine's story hit the news. And initially, like, things were looking good for Rudy, because once it became known that Christine was missing, two different business owners came forward and said that they had seen Christine on the evening of the 24th after Rudy said he had dropped her off, right? So if this is true, then Rudy's pretty much in the clear, because he's like, yeah, I dropped her off between 3 and 4. So if other people are saying they saw her around 7.
If it's true. And, well, and if these alibis weren't somehow linked to Rudy.
Right. And they were not linked to Rudy, but unfortunately for, you know, Christine's family, they were also disproven. So a laundromat owner had said that he had seen Christine through the window, and the owner of that health food store that Rudy said that, you know, she had wanted to go to said that she had been in that evening. But it was eventually determined that the woman the health food store employee saw was wearing peach pants, which, like, Christine definitely did not own anything remotely like peach pants. And the employee basically was like, oh, yeah, no, it was actually this other lady who comes here all the time who looks like her. And then the laundromat owner, who said that he had seen her the night of the 24th, said that it could have actually been the night of the 23rd that he saw her. So we're very quickly back to Rudy being the last one who saw her.
Yeah, prime suspect. Has he provided any sort of alibi after he dropped her off, or like where he went?
Well, up until this point, no. So it wasn't until November 2nd, so about a week after Christine's disappearance, that...
So like plenty of time for him to fabricate an alibi?
Right. That he got a lawyer and then agreed to be interviewed by the NYPD.
Okay.
The police wouldn't give details of the interview. They didn't say anything about what he said or what his alibi may or may not have been. But all they did say is that during the interview was cooperative, but that he did not have an airtight alibi.
Okay.
That same day, an article was published in the New York Times that quoted a police officer who spoke on the condition of anonymity, who said, quote, "He's not talking, he's not cooperating," end quote. Ah.
There we go.
Yeah.
That sounds more like the Rudy we know.
Yeah. And to this day, Rudy has never given another interview to law enforcement.
So that's it?
No, it's not it. I mean, it's it in terms of Rudy's story, because he's not giving any more of a story. But Christine's friends and family didn't give up, especially her sister, Kathy. The family hired a private investigator, Gil Alba, who was a former NYPD police officer, to work on her case. And on the 1-year anniversary of her sister's disappearance, Kathy held a vigil outside of Rudy's home. And that was just one of many vigils that took place in the first few years following Christine's disappearance. There was also one outside of the Elizabeth Seton Birthing Center in March of 1999, which is the time and place where Christine had been planning on giving birth to her baby.
Right.
Then in May of 2000, Kathy and their supporters held another vigil outside of Rudy's home in Brooklyn near what would have been Christine's 30th birthday.
So they're putting pressure on Rudy, but the family, as I should say. But what's NYPD doing?
Well, not a whole lot, honestly, after the initial investigation. So the initial investigation, they, of course, interviewed Rudy, like we mentioned, but didn't get much out of him. And so they also had to look at other options, of course, right?
Sure.
And so they're like, you know, maybe something happened to her. Maybe she's like in a ditch somewhere. So they literally did look in ditches, like on the side of the road, you know, things like that. They searched the water in nearby Sheepshead Bay. You know, they did things like that just in case accident had happened to her.
They were trying.
Yeah. And there's one article that I read where a police officer was quoted. He said something along the lines of, "We don't want to just solely focus on Rudy in case she's lying in a ditch somewhere," you know?
Yeah.
And that to an extent does makes sense. But it seems like once those searches were kind of over and once they interviewed Rudy that one time, it didn't seem like a lot happened in the investigation after that. And to be fair, this is a tough one, right? Because there's no body, like there's no physical evidence. There's right. nothing to kind of sink your teeth into.
Yeah. And if he's lawyered up at this point, you know, he's already quote unquote cooperated with the, with the police investigation, and his lawyer is going to tell him not to say anything further.
Right. And so police apparently never felt that they had enough evidence to either get Rudy to talk anymore or to compel a search warrant of any location. So his home was never searched, nor was his car, his office, anywhere remotely connected to him.
There isn't really enough evidence there. There's just not enough evidence to get a search warrant.
I would hope that it's loose.
I mean, all it is.
Given the fact that the last place she was kind of seen was in his car, that maybe they could have gotten something for the car at the very least.
Maybe, but that's pretty loose.
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, that's the only thing that I could really.
Because also, I mean, there's actually no evidence of a crime being committed.
Well, that's the other thing. Yeah.
It's not just. We're worried she's murdered.
Mm-hmm.
There's no evidence that anything actually happened.
No, you're absolutely right. So it's like, how hard can they really push? But Kathy, who had been dogged in her search for her sister, was obviously not happy with this whole situation.
For sure, yeah.
Yeah, and so she slammed the NYPD for not taking Christine's disappearance seriously and wasting valuable time, because it was just about a full week after Christine was last seen that they finally started the official missing persons investigation.
See, that's where I have the problem with it.
Yeah.
Yes, she's an adult. She, quote unquote, doesn't come home. But the fact that she's pregnant and none of her closest associates, friends, family, none of them have heard from her. And she's 5 months pregnant.
Yeah.
That, to me, should put her on an endangered person.
Yeah, level. I would think so, too, because that I feel like that just automatically puts her at a higher risk.
Yes, absolutely. Especially given the circumstances around her relationship with the father of the baby,
right,
with Rudy.
Mm-hmm. In 2000, Kathy spoke at the city council's public safety committee meeting and said, quote, "To the police, my sister Christine was a flake, a tramp, a drug dealer, an obsessed woman, unreliable, a conniver," end quote. And just as a quick side note, there's no evidence in anything that I read that Christine was a drug dealer or anything like that. Like, my guess is that the police maybe found marijuana or something like that in her house or her room or whatever. But regardless, like, drug dealers, but flakes, also tramps, all deserve justice.
Well, yes, absolutely they do. But also the police were also not, they were not saying that. At least not publicly.
Not publicly. And this was just Kathy's impression
of
what they thought of Christine and why they weren't taking her disappearance as seriously as she thought they should. All the impressions of, like, a grieving, angry sister. So, you know, the amount of truth in it, who knows? But
right.
She felt so strongly that she went up in front of people at this meeting to say that publicly. Kathy also spent thousands of dollars on a billboard that was on the side of the Brooklyn Queens Expressway that featured a photo of her sister with the caption missing/murdered. She kept tabs on Rudy and his family. And when he eventually moved to Florida with his wife and their child to open a dental practice, so I guess she and his parents still paid for that dental school, she flew down there to confront him. She sent photos of Christine to his family. I mean, she was absolutely unrelenting. And so these high-pressure tactics really reminded me of our last two episodes, the Smart case, right?
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing.
Yeah, when they were trying to find their daughter, Kristen, like, and these cases are similar in that foul play was pretty much the only thing suspected in both cases. No one really thought that either of these women had just run away or anything like that, which we so often see in these cases, like, oh, maybe they wouldn't start a new life. Like,
right.
In these two, like, nobody thought that.
Yeah.
And although the man they were last seen with was heavily suspected from the beginning, an arrest was never made. And like so many instances that we saw throughout the years in the Smart case where a break seemed as though it was just around the corner and we were finally going to have answers, Christine's family went through that in 2010. Kathy may believe that Rudy acted alone when it came to her sister's murder, but she also thinks that there were other people who were involved and or know what happened to Christine. And apparently, members of his family have made calls over the years with, like, tidbits of information. And one of those calls led Kathy and investigators to an auto supply store in Jamaica, Queens. They received information that Christine was killed and buried under the store, which was owned by Rudy's cousin, Kimraj Miraj. Kathy and police asked Miraj several times if they could search the store, and he always refused. And as Kathy said, he eventually got nasty about it. But in 2010, they found out that the building had been sold and was now a plumbing supply store.
Ah.
Yeah. So they took the request to the new owners, who are like, yes, if there is a body under our store, please remove it.
Yeah, right?
Yeah. So the police brought cadaver dogs in and they had a hit. So once the cadaver dogs had a hit, they started digging. So they brought in excavators, like the whole nine yards, and they dug over several days. When Kathy got that call that they were finally going to be digging up the store, because this tip that they had gotten, I mean, had been years before. So like, this is something that they've been trying for a long time to make happen.
Right.
And so she truly believed at this point that at least part of her nightmare was going to be over. She thought that they were going to be bringing Christine and her baby home. Because by this point in 2010, she had been searching for over 11 years for her sister. And while I don't want to say that her life was ruined, the tragedy had certainly taken a toll. She spent tens of thousands of dollars over the years on the search, and the stress of the situation led her and her husband, Kevin, to divorce. And Kathy, who had been a teacher, like eventually she just couldn't do it anymore. So she just had to completely switch careers. Plus, at the time of this dig, her and Christine's mother had just passed away from cancer.
Oh.
Yeah. So the prospect of finally finding Christine was just a small bright spot in an otherwise very dark time. But unfortunately, nothing was turned up in the search. Well, all right, I shouldn't say nothing because oddly, bones were found, but they were determined to not be human bones.
Mm.
But either way, there was no trace of Christine or her baby at the shop. And, you know, as for the hit that the cadaver dogs got, investigators are afraid that it was just a false positive, basically.
Mm-hmm.
But they are still considering the possibility that Christine could have been killed there, but then moved.
Right.
And that's why they hid, but then didn't ultimately find anything.
Yeah.
But that's the last major break in this case. Today, Rudy Persaud is still married to his wife, Rochelle, and lives in the Tampa, Florida area with her and their children. He's a dentist who seems to be living a successful life despite popping up in the news every once in a while. And Kathy continues to search. And this really does seem to be a case in which there are people out there who know exactly what happened to Christine, and people who aren't just the man who killed her. So my hope is that putting her story out there will make these people understand that Christine and her baby have not been forgotten, and maybe their conscience will lead them to finally say what needs to be said. Has been missing since October 24th, 1998. She was last seen in the company of Darshanand Rudy Persaud. She was wearing a long black skirt, a black sweater, and black boots. At the time of her disappearance, Christine had red hair and blue eyes. She was 5 months pregnant. If you have any information about what happened to Christine Kupka, please contact the New York City Police Department at 646-610-6914. You can also contact the private investigator working her case at gilalba.com. You can see all of the sources for this episode, along with photos and videos, at our website, andthentheyweregone.com.
And be sure to follow us on social, And Then They Were Gone Pod on Facebook, and at ATTWGPod on Instagram and Twitter. If you like what we're doing, please subscribe and consider leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. It will help new listeners find us. And the more people that listen, the more chances we have of bringing someone home.
And we'll see you here next week for a brand new episode.
See you next week.
And Then They Were Gone is hosted by Kona Gallagher and Ethan Flick. All research, writing, and editing is done by Kona Gallagher. Theme music is The Stork by Ketsa. Additional music is provided by Kai Engel. And Then They Were Gone is a Little Monster production.
Hey, you can do it!
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths, and sometimes heights, to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Stop by Sherwin-Williams and get 30% off select paints and stains May 2nd through the 12th. It's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Refresh your home inside and out with colors that make every space feel brand new. From cozy interiors to stunning exteriors, we've got the perfect shade for your next project. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Ugh. Spam calls. Sound familiar? Introducing Line 2. Get a second phone number right on your existing phone. Imagine. Discounts. Appointments. Online forms. Handle it all without giving out your personal number. It's like having a secret weapon against spam. And when those unwanted calls sneak through, boom. Blocked. No more interruptions. No more stress. Stay connected. Stay protected. Keep your main number safe and out of harm's way. Ready to take back your phone? Visit line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in the App Store today.